This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Here in Wisconsin, you can register to vote at the polls on Election Day. But a local healthcare provider is trying to get as many people as possible registered ahead of time. Progressive Community Health Centers in Milwaukee is taking part in a nationwide voter registration effort. They're signing up patients to vote as they visit the doctor's offices and emergency rooms. Patients were able to connect to a voter registration website by scanning a QR code on lanyards and posters found around the clinics. Now that online voter registration is closed in Wisconsin, patients can still fill out their applications and take them to the polls. Sarah Francois is the director of fund development and marketing at Progressive Community Health Centers. She spoke with WUWM's Mayan Silver about how the program began.
We were approached by the Vote ER team, I would say in late February of this year, regarding voter registration efforts and if we had an interest in participating. Originally, the program was designed to support voter registration efforts in hospitals and specifically emergency rooms, hence the Vote ER concept, with really, you know, kind of the underlying message being that a lot of people end up in emergency rooms for various different reasons. They could be sitting there for, you know, hours at a time, depending on what the situation may be. So why not you empower people to be able to register to vote while they might be waiting or doing something else or waiting for someone else at the ER? So that's kind of how the campaign originally started, is my understanding, specifically targeting a lot of underserved and underrepresented communities. And as community health centers, that's pretty much our target population, particularly here at Progressive Community Health Centers. So we know that our patients are influenced by a variety of different social determinants of health that may not be directly healthcare related. So of course, you're talking about access to food, transportation, stable housing, and other types of resources. And a lot of that is influenced by who our elected officials are and who are making decisions about our laws and services and budgets. And so that is where they decided to reach out to community health centers, recognizing that we already have a pretty strong network. And at Progressive Community Health Centers, we have a very strong advocacy committee. So we already had some experience, doing advocacy type activities, of course, all nonpartisan. And I think that's how we kind of ended up on their radar and they reached out to us.
Just for the basic facts, does Progressive have an ER, or what is a community health center?
Yeah, no, good question. So we do not have an emergency room. We are not a hospital and we are not affiliated with any specific hospitals. Community health centers are nonprofit organizations. We are just what our name says, community-based healthcare centers. So we provide primary care services. I often say we kind of fall in between a free clinic and a large hospital. So free clinics often have, you know, not necessarily regular hours or regular physician and staffing support, access to electronic health records, things like that. As community health centers, we do. So we are, you know, fully functioning, family practice organizations. We offer primary care services, internal medicine, pediatrics, dental, women's health, radiology, behavioral health services. So we're basically a one-stop shop for healthcare needs. We are typically located in underserved communities. So that's how we get the community health center designation.
And can you tell me a little bit more about the demographics of your patients and also your board members?
Yeah, so at Progressive Community Health Centers, we serve roughly 15,000 patients annually, and more than 90% of those are low income. So that's living 200% or below of the federal poverty level. A majority of our patients here at Progressive are African American, so about 84%. However, we have started seeing a little bit of a surge in our refugee population as well. So specifically Hmong and Burmese. We have some refugees that are moving into the service area. And so we have seen a little bit of an uptick in that patient demographic. About 30% of our patients are children, and about 20% are considered senior citizens. So we serve pretty much the whole gamut, all the way from birth, all the way up to senior and geriatric care as well.
Can you talk a little bit about the population that you serve, young patients, patients in poverty, patients of color, and how that intersects with people that maybe are not registered to vote?
Absolutely. So again, we're quite used to serving underserved and underrepresented communities. Progressive Community Health Centers has been around for about 20 years on the northwest side of the city. So we actually have 3 clinic locations serving that large northwest quadrant. You did also ask a question about our board of directors, which is very unique and probably an important point to mention. Our board of directors is not a traditional board in the sense that at least 51% of our board members must also be users of our services. So they are also patients at our clinic. So at a traditional nonprofit, your boards might be your heavy hitters, the most well-known in the community, and really kind of driving that fundraising engine, things like that. At our organization, our board is really more of a consumer board. The people who are making decisions about our services and hours and things like that are also our patients, and they are also our board members. So that is a very important point to make, and probably one that really drives a lot of this conversation regarding civic health being an important part of physical health. So we know that our patients suffer more from diabetes, hypertension, chronic conditions. That might be because they don't have access to fresh foods in their neighborhood. It might be because, you know, children might be living in old housing stock that has high rates of lead incidence. So we know that our patients are already facing a lot of these disparities well before any election talks come into play. And we are helping them address these in their own way as best as we can. So when I mentioned that one-stop shop atmosphere, we not only provide the healthcare services, the physical healthcare services, we also provide the mental health services that go along with that. We provide case management services to help connect people to resources. So, you know, we really do provide that full spectrum of care, which is why it's so important for us to get civically involved as well. In a nonpartisan way, because we want people to understand that all of those decisions about things that are happening in their community happen because people in power make those decisions. And so voting really does matter.
Can you detail the timeline of how Progressive got involved in voter registration efforts and how COVID affected that?
Sure. So VoteER, the program staff reached out to us late February, and the idea was that we were actually going to have kiosks placed at our clinic location so people could register while they were waiting for their appointment. So although it wasn't necessarily an ER waiting room, they were still waiting for other clinic services, and so why not have a kiosk in our facilities as well? The team did actually come out and install a kiosk for us literally the week before COVID hit. And so obviously we didn't have much of an opportunity to use the kiosk itself because a lot of our clinic access was restricted once the pandemic really started taking hold. So we were kind of collaborating with the VoteER team on how we could reach out to our patients even if we weren't seeing them in person. We had started doing a number of telehealth visits for patients, and we had also started using a text messaging platform called CareMessage to reach out to our patients with information about COVID testing, safety, our, you know, service updates to our clinic operations and things like that. As we started having conversations, we realized, hey, why couldn't we also use this to reach out to patients about reminders for voter registration efforts? And particularly around the time when the primary happened in April, obviously there was a lot of discussion about voter access, having very few polling locations, people really needing to learn how to vote in a safer way, use an absentee ballots. And so was there an opportunity for us to kind of capture, some new people registering that way as well? So we decided to start doing text message campaigns, and we have been doing these campaigns monthly since April. We just basically send out a message to our voting age patients and say, hey, we care about your civic health as well. Don't forget to register to vote. You can click here to do that. You can also click here to request your mail-in ballot.
So you're not using in-person kiosks anymore, right?
So we're not really using the in-person kiosk at this time anymore. It's obviously something, it's just one more thing we would need to keep clean, certainly as multiple people would be using it. So we actually have posters up all over our clinics, with QR codes that are scannable and also information about texting to receive links to get that voter registration information. So basically, When somebody walks into our clinic, the first thing they have to do is get temperature screened and obviously take a quick assessment for COVID symptoms. At that desk, we also have a large poster that basically says, hey, are you registered to vote? If not, our clinic can help you register or help you update your registration. They basically just scan the code, and that's how we get the information to the patients. That code links directly to TurboVote. And it's the same thing with the text messaging as well. We've also put flyers into all of our COVID testing kits. So when somebody comes to us for a COVID test, they get a packet of information, some masks, some wipes, things like that. And we've also included voter registration information in there.
What have you been finding in terms of number of patients being registered?
So we send out the messages to a pool of about 9,500 patients each month. And again, so this is basically our entire pool of voting age patients, 18 plus, that we have valid cell phone information for. And they, by the way, received kind of an opt-in welcome message. So when we started sending out these campaigns, we said, hey, we're going to be using this platform to let you know about health-related stuff and other things that might be of importance to you. And people were able to opt out, and they are able to continue to opt out at any time. It goes to about 9,500 patients a month. We are seeing about a 2% click-through rate on that. So usually a couple hundred or so actually end up clicking on the link when we send out the campaign. And I would say a couple dozen typically end up completing the process all the way through with each campaign that we send. So Alistair and the Vote ER team have the exact numbers. But I know for a fact we've fully registered over 100 patients just electronically through the text message campaigns.
Nice. And what kind of response are you getting from patients?
So far, patients have been, we receive good response from patients. We don't interact with them a whole lot through the text message cycle. It's more them just clicking through the process if they have an interest in doing so. However, we are able to see some responses if somebody might type back in their text, hey, thanks so much for the information, I'm already registered. We can definitely see that. And I would say all of the responses we've had so far have been positive. We haven't received any negative feedback from patients other than if they would choose to opt out. Which typically, we'll get, again, a dozen or so people that opt out of every text that we send, but that is pretty standard, whether it's voter related or anything else.
Why do you think that there's just 2% of people going through with everything, and what about the other 98%?
So I would say from a marketing perspective, a 2% click-through rate is actually a really high rate when you're talking about social media or texting campaigns. That's what we've learned through the research that the Vote ER team has done. And they actually submitted a paper about this, essentially a white paper to a clinical journal regarding this campaign specifically. So we're actually proud of the 2% click-through rate. Again, like you said, that still means 98% of the people are potentially ignoring the message and not doing anything. I think that's just really a fact. We wouldn't be able to tell for sure, but I think it's really just a factor of overload, information overload. I mean, I don't know about you, but I get probably 10 text messages a day from some type of a campaign somewhere that I just end up ignoring, and I don't really respond to. And so I think that's just part of the human nature aspect of it. That's also a reason why we've continued to send the campaigns, because we know that it will probably take some time. If it's not right around an election, it's probably not seen quite as urgent. I think one of the most successful messages we sent was around the primary partisan that was in August. We sent out a text message just a couple days before that partisan primary, and we had probably the highest success rate we've had out of any of the campaigns with people following through and clicking through the process. So I think as we get closer to election season and the November 3rd election, we're anticipating that we'll see a little bit more urgency around that.
And what about the lanyards? That's a whole nother effort. Can you describe what they look like and what they're for and how they're working?
Yeah, so it's still part of the Vote ER campaign. These are called Healthy Democracy Kits. So fancy name for a very, really basic tool that we've been using. These are lanyards with badges on them, and they are basically smaller versions of kind of the posters and other things that we have up in the clinic. There is a QR code on the badge. There's also a number where people can text to get information about voter registration. So again, it's that same code. The idea here being that these badges stand out when our providers wear them and when our support staff wears them, and it can spark conversation with patients about the voter registration process. Because a lot of times, you know, we recognize that patients have really trusted relationships with their healthcare providers, especially now. And so if their provider's wearing something, there's often a conversation like, hey, what's around your neck? Oh, did you know we're supporting this voter registration effort? Have you updated your registration? Do you know where you need to go to vote? And so that allows the conversation to start, and then the provider can say, hey, well, maybe take a few minutes, just scan this QR code or take a picture of this text number and make sure to complete your registration or update it. We find that those personal asks typically always do better, right? So if somebody's asking you directly and it's somebody that you trust and that you know, you're much more likely to follow through with things than, you know, just getting kind of a random solicitation.
That makes a lot of sense. Sarah Francois, thank you very much for speaking about Progressive's voter registration efforts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sarah Francois is the Director of Fund Development and Marketing at Progressive Community Health Centers. She spoke with WUWM's Mayan Silver about their voter registration efforts.